Our next presentation, the largest known prime numbers. And I bet that some of you already figured out some strange things at the back somewhere there. And there is even a small, I don't know, piece of glass that you need to use to watch actually the prime numbers. So, how many prime numbers do you know? I've been an entrepreneur all my life. My first venture was a mathematics academy, and I think that I still remember how to do square roots manually. That gives you an idea how old am I. And then we knew how to memorize prime numbers until 1000, and even convinced kids of 12 years old to memorize that. So let's see what Rob comes out with that. Well, you need to... Done? Oh. Oof.
So I'm Rob Giltrek. Some of you may know me from my early days involvement in the Wellylug. I kept it running for a few years in early 2000, founding member of the New Zealand Open Source Society. And I also work for Sun Microsystems as a systems and storage architect. But this discussion is really about my hobby rather than my job. And that hobby is searching for the world's largest prime numbers. And to do that, I've used a lot of Sun technology, and we'll get onto that. So what I'm going to cover here is a quick look at GIMP's project, which is the project involved in searching for these large prime numbers. Then the Lucas-Lehmer primality test, which is the real problem we're trying to solve. The code, the application to do and resolve the problem, the tools I used, and then the parallelization effort. And that was really because once I got hold of the code, though it was designed to run in a parallel manner, it hadn't actually been coded as such yet. So the GIMS project is basically the great internet SN prime search. It is a distributed computing project. There's roughly 60,000 computers out there which are actively doing searches for these large prime numbers. There's about 35,000 registered users and about 260,000 actual computers registered, but only about 60,000 of them actually are actively giving results. And it's not a bad sort of supercomputer putting out 40 teraflops on average, and that's slowly increasing over time. The project has found a bunch of Mersenne prime numbers, and I'll tell you exactly what these are. For those who don't know, Mersenne prime is a specific type of prime. It's basically where 2 to the power of a prime number minus 1 is also a prime number. That is called a Mersenne prime. They're very rare, but they're quite interesting in terms of really getting into the large number space. Also have correlations to perfect numbers as well. For every Mersenne prime, there is a correlation to a perfect number. And they've been around a hell of a long time. First documented in 5th century BC, quite a lot was written about them by Euclid in 300 BC. But the first two were found in the 5th century, the next two were found in the 4th century, and then there was a pretty big gap after that, through the Dark Ages before we got to number 5. So there's only 12 discovered before the advent of computer processing, And if you can see, there's a sort of thing down the back there where I've got the largest one known before computer processing, the largest one involved with computer processing but before distributed computing, and then the largest one which is with the assistance of distributed computing. That one, the number's very, very large, and you actually need a little thing to look through to actually see the digits. So, but I urge you to take a look because it's quite interesting. So there's now 47 have been discovered. The name Mersenne Prime comes from this guy, Marin Mersenne, who was a French monk. Pretty interesting character. Actually, the fact that his name got associated to the Mersenne Primes is bizarre because he really didn't do that much with them. And there's plenty of other people whose names could have been associated with them. He's actually more famously known for being the father of acoustics. He did a lot of the initial maths around chord structures. So for everyone who plays the guitar, you've got a lot to thank this guy in terms of understanding the science behind how acoustics work. But the thing I found most interesting researching him was that he was what I consider, semantic web version, the very first alpha version. He would go out and write to all the scientists throughout Europe and say, give me some information on what you're working on. I'm going to be doing this to lots and lots of other people. And when I find the bits which they've got of interest, which you may be of interest in, I will forward it on between you all. Not only that, he would translate it. So he would have a little team of his fellow monks who are fairly educated and spoke a variety of languages, and they would go out gathering bits of data from the scientific web out there, taking it in, working what was relevant to other parties, translating it, pushing it out again. A fantastic guy, and it's just like, wow, what could have he achieved in today's society with the technology available to us today? So back to the actual problem we're trying to solve, and that is saying, okay, well, how do we just find these large prime numbers? Well, we know a lot of the smaller prime numbers. We know them all sequentially, so we can just take one and do the process, 2 to the power of b minus 1. Is that a prime? Well, how do you actually work that out? Well, you can do old school maths and say, let's just divide it by every sort of odd number up to the square of the total number, but that will take forever. It's actually the first bit we do go through that process to rule out some of the things. So we take the large number, divide it by 3, is that poly divisible, yes or no? Okay, is it a prime? Is it potentially a prime, yes or no? But the real way of doing it is using the Lucas-Lehmer test, which is here. Now, for those of you who didn't do too well at maths, it's actually a fairly simple equation with a little bit of research, fairly simple to understand. And the key part of it is the squaring. Computational-wise, it's the squaring which takes the time. Trouble is, when you're doing squaring really large numbers, it's extremely problematic. So we use what we call a fast Fourier transform. Now, the maths involved in that is actually really, really hard and way above my head. Fortunately, I don't need to understand it to get the code running fast. So, and the person I deal with is this guy, Ernst Mayr. He's in California. Really interesting guy. He, mathematician, understands the whole maths behind it really, really well, but he also works for various companies doing CPU design. So he's got sort of the best of both worlds and knows how to write a program to get the most out of the CPU and vice versa. There are 3 main programs out there which do this work, and that is Prime95 M Prime is the one which the general populace use to just say, I'll download it onto my computer, it'll go get a number, it'll start processing it, 6-8 weeks later, months later, it'll return a result. That's runs on Windows and Linux, and is primarily written, the core of the code is written in assembler to really get the speed, and runs just on Intel, AMD x86 platforms. G Lucas is a written in C, and it's can obviously, being written in C, it's more can run on various platforms. Key design there is that it's fine-grained threading, and then MLucas is the one which I've been working on, and that is more of a coarse-grained threading model. Now, the reason why people don't just use the top one is that that doesn't scale very well in terms of parallelism. So most people run, you know, they may run, if they've got a quad-core machine, they'll run four individual processors, each doing one number, rather than trying to take one number and carve it up, because it doesn't perform too well. Where the others are much better, better at handling parallelism. So it uses a custom FFT. There's lots of optimized FFT libraries out there, all wonderful, but when you're talking about the numbers, the size of the numbers we're dealing with, which is in the range of, you know, 12, 13 million digits long, they just don't cut the mustard. So you've really got to have a specialised one. It's pure C, and we're starting to throw in a little bit of assembler in there, assembly, and that's just to do prefetch and the like. Trouble is, now to really get performance, you've got to go to another layer, and with the, certainly with the x86, you've got to start using ECC2 directly to really get the performance out of it. So, but this was originally designed for non-x86, so for your alphas and your sparks and those systems which did have, you know, the potential to have lots of CPUs in them. And the goal for it was really to have the fastest verification code. So that was, what happens was when these 60,000 computers are going out there finding primes and they're all processing one, and you know, about every 18 months one comes up and says, oh, I think I've got one. An email goes out to about half a dozen people around the world, I'm one of them, and we all race to try and verify this new find as quickly as possible. Given that, you know, the fast PC will process one number in about 6 to 8 weeks, people don't want to wait around that long, so we try and throw something a bit quicker at it to get the results. So, being that I work for Sun, and Solaris and Sun, you know, high levels of parallelism, it's just, you know, that's the ecosystem we work in. I thought, great, well, I'm in a perfect position to take this code and see what I can do with it. This is my hobby, and just my job gave me access, either officially or unofficially, to resources within the company. And there's certainly plenty of other people in the company who are interested in this sort of things, which were willing to help me out. In fact, plenty of senior managers were quite happy to say, hey, this is cool. Here's a multi-million dollar box, have a play for a while. So at Sun, we got a bunch of hardware, which is really great. Lots of it with lots of cores in it. We've got Solaris, Open Solaris, and that is synonymous with, you know, high levels of parallelism. And Sun Studio, which is something I never played with before having to do this. It's not part of my job at all. So on the hardware, we thought, right, well, where do we start? You know, what sort of hardware is going to be able to handle this highly parallelized workload well? And we got things like the AMD Opteron, which at the time was sort of ahead of Intel in terms of their high-end CPU. And that sort of box is, you know, today you've got eight CPUs, 6 cores per CPU, 48 cores, you know, plenty of juice there. UltraSpark T series, that's really interesting. That's a cool thread technology, lots of slow threads, and you can get a box now which has got 4 processors, 8 cores per processor, 8 threads per core. So you're talking, you know, 256 threads in a box. And then you've got the traditional old big iron. With the Spark 64 processors, you can get a couple of racks, bolt them together, 128 processors, 4 cores per processor, 2 threads, so you're talking like 512 threads in a box. Massive throughput, I think it's 3/4 of a terabyte per second between 2 boxes bolted together. Fantastic memory, you know, terabyte of memory sort of size.
Sorry, I have the first prime number.
No, that's a unitary number.
We can argue about that.
How am I going for time? So I had plenty of hardware options to play with, and then Solaris. Well, Solaris, you know, I'm a Linux guy just as much as the next person, but when it comes to scalability, I can't really go past Solaris. Just from the history which it's had. I mean, you had your large ETNK boxes with 64 processors, you know, a decade ago. It's an operating system which is used to and familiar to having a lot of threads available to it. It's not something you have to sort of add on to, so it's actually a little bit easier on occasion to use this instead of Linux. Though, you know, very, very similar. Particularly with when you're using this many cores, the operating system, you really just wanted to get it out of the way. Not try and do anything too smart. Benefit of Solaris, consistent across all the hardware platforms, so we had multiple types of chips, but you know, we're all just planning for one operating system. The memory placement option of it is very, very good. And that was a key, you know, it was a necessity for Solaris to be able to place memory more optimally because it was designed to be running on larger systems. It wasn't an add-on, it was just a core function. Observability of Solaris is very good with D-trace and resource control, you know, turn off threads, turn off cores, doing stuff very, very nice. Now, Sun Studio.
We are running out of time.
Am I? I'm very, very close to it, okay. So Sun Studio, it's part of the Sun ecosystem, and Sun ecosystem is threads, and there's lots of tools which you can use to use it. So the parallelization effort had the software design, but and had the high access to the hardware, the tools to do it, but not the time to actually take that code and properly parallelize it, put in the OpenMP, do all the testing. So we got a Google Summer of Code project up and running, got a guy to do it for me, fantastic, did a brilliant job. Can't say enough about the guy who did the work. And we got some... Oops. Right, skip a lot there. So some of the tools, Sun Studio, thread performance. This is a situation where we had four threads going full out and the other one just only kicking in every so often. The tools which are available with Sun Studio are really, really good for analysing your problems. Armdahl's law is absolutely key. What we found is that when a single-threaded process, we basically had a transform, square, transform, carry. As you start doing the first three bits, you know, when you're only talking about a two-core machine, not that much difference, but when you're talking 16 threads, the bit which isn't parallelized suddenly becomes a really big bottleneck. So we've got some challenges, big numbers, lots of hardware options, so lots of testing, and compilers can be broken. I've broken Sun Studio compiler three times using this, simply because we're pushing it to the edge of what's needed. Our end result was 12.3 times performance for 16 threads, which is pretty damn good. In fact, when we used four cores, we actually got a more than four times increase due to the cache effect. And the end result was that we were now the fastest code for verifying primes. And back in 2008, we were the first to validate a prime, the first one over 10 million digits, which was worth a $100,000 prize. So there's some useful links that will go up on the website. And now our challenge now, taking it to, we could really only effectively work at 16 threads, want to take that to 40, prepare for 100 million digits, much bigger problem, and that it takes 2 years to process it. The 160 meg working set, we try to fit everything in cache. And finally, James will be keen to know that we are going to leverage Nehalem EX. It's proving to be an extremely powerful processor using the GLucas code. It's just taking us a while to get it going with the MLucas code. So
thanks, Rob, and good luck.
Thank you.